It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
And away we go, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have you along, my friend, Captain Mike Ward.
How about it, Sean?
It's good. It's good as we continue kind of transitioning from fishing season into hunting season.
You're gator hunting.
Well, that's, you know, and last week on the show when you were out on assignment, yeah. I had Chris Nix from District 5, a wildlife biologist for the state of Alabama, and I said, you know, gator maybe is perfect in August because it's fishing and hunting. You know, I mean, around here we call it a gator hunt. Guys, yeah. I know in Louisiana say they're fishing gators.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Well, it's both.
It is kind of both. You're hooking them.
You catch them with a reel and rod and shoot them with a gun.
Yeah. So, this is the transition. The gator thing is the transition. So, nothing to report yet.
No big ones.
We'll see. You know, it's.
Well, you're taking some pretty special guests, too.
Yeah, I'm taking special guests. I'm going to keep that quiet until after that. But they've got some special guests. They're on the night one, two boats worth. We have a follow boat and a hunt boat, and it's been a big effort, but yeah, it's finding that right gator. Now we are hunting in the coastal zone, and we talked about it on last week's show, hunting on the coastal zone. And I tell you, I didn't realize
exactly what that meant.
Yeah, and there's five zones, right? So you've got the Eufaula in the southeast Alabama, the west central, the delta, and then this coastal zone.
Yeah,
and coastal zone is everything south I-10.
Yeah,
okay, kind of where I've, you know. What's made it easy for me to guide guys in the past gator hunting is they've gotten the Delta zone. There's just a lot of places I can check.
Sure.
We can just ride and check and ride and check and ride and check. If I don't already have one, like when I was young and used to guide, I spent enough time up there all the time. I was like, I know where there's a couple big ones, but there's just enough of them up there. The habitat's good enough. In the coastal zone, there's still big gators in the coastal zone, but they're just, they don't seem to be as regular any given spot.
Yeah.
Right. So we've been, you know, and the last hunt we were, I don't know, we probably looked at 25, 27 gators or something like that. Now that's ranging from biddies to 7 foot or 8 foot. Just couldn't find the gator you want.
Yeah.
You know, and then you get this feeling, you know, there were other boats in the area and you'd see them go through and then you'd be like, man, if he was in there, they would have seen him.
Yeah.
And then you go in there sometimes, you're like, well, maybe they didn't because, you know, all that takes is the gator hears that boat coming, he goes under and he stays under for 5 minutes. Five boats could pass him. So I don't know. We'll see. Hopefully I have some more to report on next week's show on that, but we're still laying with it. We're gator hunting and getting it done. And my ability to stay up all night kind of stuff like that has weakened with my age.
Yeah, that's tough, isn't it? Stay out 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning.
And stay alert, looking, you know. You find, like, for the first hour or two, everybody's looking, every Q-beam's on, everybody's looking, and everybody, look, there, okay, there's another one. And as you get later tonight, everybody's like, you see people, like, playing with, like, their drink cup or something. Like, hey, let's hunt here. Let's get this done. But it's been fun. Hopefully we have something of note to report here before it's all said and done. Want to talk a little fishing?
Yeah.
So, I don't put a date on it, but I know a conversation I've had with Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon, had it this last week. It sounds like, because people keep asking me each week, are we snapper fishing this weekend? And right now you're snapper fishing. It's another, you know, yesterday, today, tomorrow, and Monday.
Yep.
And it could go on because, okay, we're not running through the quota as quickly as we were in the summertime, right?
Yeah.
Which has, you know, been one of those things that it's funny. In the early season, it was about weather and being rough. In the later season, there's been a lot of good days. I look at my phone, I can't go because of X, Y, and Z, a hunt or work, you know, in the woods or my job, my family, you know, those things. But the weather's been decent. But I think there's more people that are, you know, school's back in. And
school's starting back in. A lot of football, you know, kids playing football now. Soccer's going on. There's all kind of activities for the kids.
Yeah, and it's slowed down.
And that goes on the weekends. And I'll tell you another reason. Is gas prices.
Got that right.
That's another reason. I mean, to go out in my boat and go, let's say, go 50 miles out and roam around a little bit and come back, you're looking at $500 or more on gas. Where it used to be a couple hundred dollars, you know, now it's $500.
So Sunday.
So that makes a difference.
Yeah. I mean, I made this decision. Okay, here you go. A week ago tomorrow, I was going to go. You and I talked about that. I was going to go. And I had between my daughter and some people and my brother-in-law and some people, we had maybe five people laid out on this trip. That's fine. That's good. We're going to take this trip. It boiled down by late Saturday night. There's going to be two of us, my brother-in-law and I, and we both just said, you know I like to go.
Yeah.
But it was like, it just didn't.
It's not worth it to go out there.
Even though Trigger and Amberjack are now open.
Right.
But I needed more than two people to fill up that tank. And my boat's nowhere near the size of yours. So,
And generally speaking, you're going further out to catch Amberjack, typically speaking.
Correct.
Okay, so that means you're going to burn more gas, two people. So you can catch two Amberjack. How many triggerfish?
One.
Okay, so you catch two triggerfish and four snapper.
No, you catch one trigger per person.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So there's two
of us. Yeah,
two
amberjack,
two triggerfish, and four snapper.
Yeah.
And spend a couple hundred dollars in gas,
yeah.
Two people, it don't make sense.
Yeah. So that's,
I think that's a big part of it.
And now, it seems like we'll be fishing longer because of that.
Yeah, I don't doubt it. Yeah, I mean, gas has just gotten out of sight.
Right. Next time you see Mike and I, will be on his boat, and you'll think, holy cow, they just rescued a couple boats worth of people that were sinking. In fact, that's not. We're going to turn Mike's boat into like a head boat and have us all lined up around the side so we can afford the gas in that rig.
And we'll take donations at the end.
That's right. Trying to make that thing go. But the good news is, and we'll, you know, hopefully if they start seeing the end coming, we'll tell you beforehand. But right now, a conversation I just had 2 days ago, 2 days ago, what Scott Bannon says, you're open now, and we could be fishing snapper for several more, you know, weekend, 4 day seasons. So
we need to get Scott back on too and talk about the reef program they've got going on. It is a massive reef program they've got going on.
They're
spending millions of dollars adding many more square miles to the areas out there, new areas, and putting way more reefs out there than in the past. So it's exciting.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, it really is exciting for the snapper fisherman. The problem is, I mean, we can't hardly catch what we got right now, you know? So that,
right, but,
it's still good because it's more spots means eventually there's going to be more fish.
And spots, let's talk about this too. Lord knows, because, I mean, when I was a boy, you were already way into this and I was watching you do it. But from then to now, the number of spots that aren't there anymore, whether they got moved, covered up, right? This idea that that spot will always be there.
No,
some have always,
no.
But some aren't there anymore.
Yeah. But right. There's still some big spots like the Wallace or.
Sure, yeah. Big,
you know, the big.
I'm talking more like a pyramid
kind of
or heck, chicken coops only last, you know. So, I mean, those things.
Yeah.
You know, it's a.
So a lot of them get moved, a lot of them get covered up, and a lot of them just deteriorate.
Have you ever noticed that on a spot? And we're not going to turn the. You and I could turn the show into Snapper Chat, but you ever get spots where you don't know why those fish are there? Like, it was a reef, but it doesn't even mark up much. Like, you can go – the two things are true. You can go to a pyramid that marks up like it was up under the boat. It juts up so much and doesn't have fish on it.
Yeah.
Or
You
can't catch anything. Then you go to a place that you can tell the bottom's harder, but I'm not talking about hard bottom, natural bottom. I'm talking about out in the regular reef zone, and there's fish there.
Yeah.
But you don't ever really mark the structure.
Absolutely.
So I mean, the two things are true. I mean,
And catch fish. Once you drop down and put food down there and they start feeding on it, then your screen starts marking fish.
Oh, yeah, you see the fish, but you never do go, you know.
To start with, you think there's nothing there. Might as well not even drop.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I've had people on the boat with me. They're like, well, but the structure. I said, what do you care?
Yeah.
Because the fish are here, but I always wondered that. Is that something that gets almost completely covered up, you know? That, and then those questions, you get a hurricane come through or whatever, and you go back there and may uncover it, and it shows 2 or 3 feet of relief off the bottom.
That's right. And then, again, it may move it, and you may never find it again.
True.
You know, so there's lots and lots of reefs out there right now that nobody is fishing. Nobody's fishing because they haven't found it. Hurricanes moved it. There's plenty of spots out there like that.
I used to find those. I need to find some of those because there's – although I'll say the trips since I got back from – or maybe late July, I had not seen – the pressure definitely was off. It was early on, we'd go out there. It was just, you know, I'd run past spot after spot of mine. You know, places I thought that were at least semi-private.
Yeah.
And probably the two boats that were sitting on it thought it was as well, and I keep moving and keep moving. And I didn't see as much of that toward, you know, and maybe that's just less people out fishing it. All right, so that's on the snapper front. I'll say this, that water's clearing up in the bay, getting a little bit of green to it. I tell you what, there's from gator hunting in the coastal zone, and I'm not down at Dolphin Island or I'm not at Bonscour. I'm way north of there. There's some salt in the water. I see some shrimp flipping.
Yeah.
And finger mullet are in there. So it's maybe, you know, knock on wood, I'm so nervous here, that we get maybe a normal causeway fishing fall, I'm hoping.
What's the rivers doing? I have not checked the rivers.
Rivers down. Let me see.
They are down. I haven't checked.
Yeah, I had to go into the river camp the other day, and it was way on down the bluff. Let me see. We can give you an update. Can we do this before the commercial break music plays? This is a challenge here. All right, let's see if I can. Let's see. I look for this enough on the Google here. Does it present it? Am I going to? This is where you fill. Yeah, there we go, Mike. This is where you're supposed to fill in with the useful tidbits while I do my clicking around.
I don't have any.
Well, that's discouraging here. Let's see. Yeah. That's not it. Now, it's the pressure of being up against the break.
Oh, you're good at it, though, Sean. You do it every day for a living, so you're really good at it. I'm not worried about you.
All right, here we go.
Getting it done.
Here we go. Even before the music starts, right when the music starts, Mobile River at 3.6 at Barry. Yeah, so 3.6 at Barry. Leroy, 5.6. Claiborne, 16.4.
So it's dang. It's good.
Yeah, and I can tell you, just from riding around looking for gators, it's looking better and better.
Things cleaning up.
And I may or may not have been seeing redfish, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right, be right back. All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward. Show brought to you in part by McConnell Buick GMC. Big thank you to Louie. A little thank you to Louie and everybody at McConnell Buick GMC for bringing this. And we talked a little gator hunting. We talked some snapper fishing in the mix as we kind of start looking forward to fall fishing. I mentioned that things were looking kind of, you know, not saying go run up to the causeway with looking for bird schools yet.
Right.
But south of the causeway, I mean, August, I've definitely found those fish south of the causeway, the trout, you know, south of the causeway in August, you know. Yeah.
And it's August, been a wet. First September is when it really kind of starts getting good after water conditions are good.
And they're looking a lot better. Also, on my radar, Mike will be like, yeah, always birds on my radar.
Well, sure. It's almost bird time.
Yeah, so coming up next month, dove and blue-winged teal. And I'll say that we're going to have Seth Maddox, who's the waterfowl coordinator for the state of Alabama, on the show in the next couple weeks here to talk about it. Duck numbers, national duck numbers, we've been on this long tear of good conditions, and, you know, some years better than others, but things have been great since the 80s.
Yeah.
Not a real good year. Not a real good year on the May pond counts. So that's it. May pond counts are how they fly
you know, over and look at the
ducks. Yeah, and they're not really even saying how many ducks. They're saying last year there were X number in this quadrant. It's the same, less, or more than last year. You know, they do. Yeah. That's kind of how they gauge it year to year. And it's not as good. Now, there's different areas, right? There's prairie pothole region. There's the boreal forest region. So they're not all the same. But the duck numbers, they're looking like, and I'll get – when we have Seth on, we'll go dive into this and look at the numbers are down some. Does that – we're always a year delayed when it comes to regulation. In other words, what happened the last summer is really what dictates the season dates we're hunting this year.
Right.
So we'll be 660 this year. So that – and if y'all don't duck hunt, so you have a framework where the most liberal is – six ducks, and there's a mix of how many of this and that, but a six-duck limit with 60-day season is like the most liberal. Shutting down is the least liberal, but when I first started duck hunting, it was 330. So three ducks per day, and different species and all that, but three ducks per day, 30-day season. We went from there to like a 550, and then the last 20 years or so, we've been at a 660. But we may in the next couple of years drop back. We'll look at it. And it's not people killing ducks. It's not about killing ducks. It's about conditions for breeding and nesting. So
yeah, I mean, there's a lot goes into that.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't know how they do all the counting and everything. It's, to me, it'd be kind of hard to do that, but they've got to. They got to figure out how to do it.
Yeah, and
for sure.
Yes, yeah, so they have a not, and we'll, when we do another duck show, we'll delve into it deeply. But basically, they have areas of, and it's good, a lot of the prairie areas, because you can see. You do flyovers and you can see.
Right.
And they have grids set out, and they said, okay, in this grid, it's not like they're trying to count every duck that's out there, but they're looking at it and counting those grids and saying, there are more ducks nesting in here than last year. They're the same number. Or they're less. You
right.
know, let's go to the next grid. So you can, it, instead of just saying, here's the total population, it's like, how's it trending? Is it stable?
Right.
Is it going up? Is it going down?
Yep.
Okay, go to the next sector. You know, is it stable? Is it trending up? Trending down? And you, that's how they make those decisions.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, that'll be, and speaking of which, on, you know, duck wise, blue wing teal next month. Teal season starts the 11th. Yeah. So that's going to start on the 11th. North zone
and dove season when?
So okay, north zone. Yeah, I can pull this up here, but north zone dove opens on the 4th. South zone on the 11th. You want to run through those dates here? We can do that. So yeah, so the north zone for the morning and white wing dove season starts September 4th, and it's of course first day. It's afternoon shooting only, Mike.
Okay,
so, it's always been the
yeah.
rule. And then from September 5th through the 24th is the first split. So September 4th afternoon through October 24th, the first split. Second split, November 20th through November 28th, the old Thanksgiving special. And the third split for the North Zone, December 18th through January 16th.
Yeah.
South Zone, which is, you know, really the easier way to say it is, the rest of the states, the North Zone, if you're not, you know, in Mobile and Baldwin and what is it, Escambia, Dale, Covington, Coffee, Geneva, Henry, Houston counties.
Right.
Right.
Just the southern counties.
Right. And really, it's not, it's really not that different. It's 1 week. So the start is 1 week later.
Yeah.
Which is good because I still hadn't mowed my billet field.
Yeah.
So the south zone, so that's us. Like if you're in Mobile and Baldwin County, that's where you dove hunt. We open up September 11th. And it's the 11th through the 31st for the first split, November 20th through the 28th, just like the, you know, the only thing different is the first split date between the south and north zone.
Yeah.
The second and third are the same. So November 20th through 28th, December 18th through January 16th. So that's dove season dates. So north zone, you start on the 4th. South zone, you start on the 11th. And then teal season starts on the 11th for the entire state.
And that's a terrible time to be hunting, too. It's 100 degrees usually out there trying to kill a dove.
Yes. That's
but it doesn't matter. I mean, people are going to be out there doing it. And they're going to be doing it, I guess, if they can buy shells to do it with. And I see that the shells are becoming a little more readily available.
Okay, where'd you go? You see?
Well, I just know I had a friend of mine tell me the other day that Academy got in a big supply of ammunition. It may not have a box left, but they said the shelf had a lot of ammunition.
Because I walked in there for something a week or so ago.
This past week.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because it looked like, you remember the old videos out of Russia during the fall of the Soviet Empire when the grocery stores had nothing in it. That's what it looked like.
Yeah. I guess they get it in and it don't last a day or so, and then they're out. And then, but he said it was a lot of ammunition.
Well, that's,
but that don't mean it's going to last very long.
Yeah, and that's a problem because there's not been, then people are going to buy them all up. And
yeah, and I don't know which academy he went to.
Right.
He's at our office, so I assume he went to the one on Airport Boulevard, but I'm not sure of that.
Well, we'll have maybe the weekly ammo counter, and if our friends at McCoy's can check in, or Lee out at G&D, or somebody can check in.
Let us know.
Brad, let us know what you got ammo-wise. We'll do a weekly dove load update.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty bad if you don't have any ammunition right now.
It makes it hard to dove hunt.
Huh?
Makes it hard to dove hunt.
Yeah, pretty hard, unless you got a buddy that's got some.
That's right.
You know, so things are tough. I'm telling you, I don't know how the ammunition is going to ever get straightened out. It just don't look like it's ever going to make it where we can go get ammunition when we want it like it used to be.
Yeah, eventually. It always turns. I don't know when, though, but it always turns. All right, so we got – that's coming up in September. Gator hunting's going on right now. And then, y'all, it's October and it's bow season. So one of those things we talk about, you and I have talked about for years, too, is and we probably won't start seeing in reports of it till next month. What's your acorn crop looking like?
Yeah.
You know? I have been – this is how nerdy I am. I have been riding around the property with binoculars.
You're nerdy.
I am a nerd. And look, check, because I mean, I don't have a ton of big, like, I have just a few white oaks.
Yeah.
And so I stop and wish it was different, but I ain't got anything.
None.
Not like the red oaks and others got, but.
Yeah, no white oaks?
Nope. And they weren't there last year either. Like, yeah. I'm on a 2-year cycle of not doing much on them.
Yeah.
Which is bothersome to a bow hunter.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you got them dropping, bow hunter, 1st of October, that's where you want to be.
Oh, you know what I thought about, too? And I got a text about this week before last during Midday Mobile. Somebody, you know, we're talking about whatever politics. And they said, hey, you know, have you talked about your throwing mow fields lately? I'm like, no, we're talking about your whatever Biden had done or something at the state legislature. I'm like, yeah, believe me, at that point, I would have rather talked about throwing mow. But it reminded me, you know, we promised last year to do it like we did it last year. We'll do a show each year, if not one, maybe two, about that process. And yeah. I'm already started that on the farm.
Right.
And there's been podcasts and people talking. Now, you and I have been talking about this for 5 years, six years I've been doing
long
this.
Time.
But now there's a lot of people talking about using, you know, grain drills and all that kind of stuff. And that's great. But that's something that's been out of my budget. Right. And with throwing mode, this is the idea of not putting a disc in your dirt. And doesn't apply the same, you know, it's not always the same. It's specific to areas who benefits more from it. I end up hunting places that aren't in the Black Belt, right? I hunt sandy loam or sandy soils. So as they're disced up, they really get poor. And so what I've been doing over time is trying to build topsoil. Because, you know, you can be in sandy country and walk out there in the pine woods and dig up under the pine trees, and it's not sand right there.
Yeah,
it's dirt.
It's black dirt.
Yeah. So you can make it. So that's what we're doing in these fields. That process I do, and maybe it's something you can think about now if you're hunting club or wherever you hunt, if y'all have not, you know, you're just sitting there like it does all summer. This process, and we'll get into it in depth on the show, but I like to, if it's real high, I go ahead and mow it to about knee height. And I do that basically so my herbicide sprayer gets a big, you know, if your spreader throws a fan of 12 feet or 14 feet, if it's blowing into Johnson grass that's 2 feet away from your four-wheeler, it's not going 14 feet.
Right.
So that's why I mow two things. It gets that first cutting down there to make mulch, because this is what we're doing, y'all. We're breaking down grasses and grasses and forbs and all that and turning them into dirt. So I mow it to a height where I'll be able to spray it next month. So that's what I'm doing. I'm just adding some mulch, and I'm getting it to where my sprayer is going to work. I mean, there's nothing fancy. People are like, why do you do that? So my sprayer will work. That's it. Okay. And then, so you're going to then spray it, you know, usually at the beginning of September, sometime in there, I'll spray. And I spray my patches. So you go into that patch. It's now either it never got higher than knee high, or you mowed it down to knee high. And you're going to spray it with glyphosate. You're going to kill it.
Right. Kill everything in there.
Smoke it. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Then you're going to come in. It doesn't have to be, you know, then you give it a 10 days or 20, whatever, and you find your right weather window with the rain coming, possible, like we all want. And what I do is I seed and I fertilize and I lime, if I am going to add lime at that point, which you should do in the spring, but I'm going to add that directly into the field. So I'm coming through. I've got a hopper, you know, either it's on a tractor hopper or something on a four-wheeler or whatever, and I will put my seed, my fertilizer, and my lime, just spread it like it was a disc field.
Yeah.
But it's not. It's right. And then after that's done, you come in with a bush hog, drop that baby low, and maybe get her a touch over 540, maybe make her 550, let her spin a little fast, go through that field. And what you're doing is you're mowing the grass that's there, but it's like a ping pong ball. Those seeds and fertilizer and all that's going to drop down through the grasses and make soil contact.
Yeah.
Now you're going to lay all that grass on top of it that keeps the moisture in.
Right.
And gives it like a greenhouse to grow, and those seeds are going to sprout and come up through it. Now, sometimes if you have a Colts packer, you can come in through and press it some more in there, but I've had plenty of patches.
Oh, you've done it. You proved it works great.
Yeah, you can do it. So we are going to do a full show on that. All right, coming right back, we'll talk some bass fishing. Captain Wayne Miller is going to join us next. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors, brought to you in part by McConnell Buick GMC. Big thank you to those folks. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, and Captain Wayne Miller.
We got the main man on here now.
That's right, because he is
the bass man.
But this is the month of August. You don't catch bass in August, right, Captain Wayne?
I tell you what, guys, it's great to be with y'all. And it's been a pretty amazing month so far. I mean, we finally got the water down on the river stages. I mean, it's been a crazy year. I mean, we had high water up until, you know, even into August. So
that is,
you
know, strange, isn't it, Wayne? Typically, about the first week or two of June, the water's down, and it typically stays down, you know?
Yeah.
And now we're in August before it goes down.
We typically see around the 1st of June, you know, we'll see the reading at Berry drop down into that 2.5-3 foot stage, and that's where it's going to ride. It's going to stay there. And, you know, 2 weeks ago, we were still at, you know, almost 6 feet on the Berry reading.
It's been a weird year. We have had some tremendous rains up north.
Yeah. But, you know, there's a couple of real good pluses to this in that, you know, the fish just got a phenomenal break. I mean, there weren't any people out there fishing, especially on the main rivers.
Yeah.
So, you know, the fish hadn't gotten pressured a lot. And, you know, the water temperature has actually been cooler than what you would see typically this time of year. But I don't know. I talked to Sean earlier this week. I don't know if I mentioned it to him or not. I can't remember now. But, man, this past week, Mike, you would have loved this, man. As far up as the railroad trestle below Dead Lake on the Mobile River, there have been schools of Jack Crevalle in that river that have been, I mean, awesome. Some of the biggest schools of Jacks I've ever seen.
Well, that's a good reason to go way up above the train trestle.
And, man, you know, it's amazing to see that for anybody that's never witnessed it, because just all of a sudden, it'll look like, you know, the river's boiling.
Right.
I mean, and they are just, they're the most voracious, you know, fish, I think, on the planet from the standpoint of being aggressive and eating.
Absolutely, they are. You know, it's fun for people to catch those that, you know, that don't fish a lot, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And fish up the river and don't catch many big fish. I mean, that's fun for kids to catch them, but I'm past that point.
You know what, though, Mike? I can't resist it. I do it every time. Of course,
you're
different.
You know, you're just
different. I always reach down and say, okay, which crankbait do I don't mind sacrificing? And I'll put that one on, and I'll make a long cast, and sure enough, you know, a lot of times, you know, these were big jacks. Some of them I've seen this week. I mean, up in that 20-plus pound range.
Wow.
And, you know,
that's big.
A normal bass reel, 130, 150 feet of line, you know, they'll spool out in a heartbeat.
So if y'all are looking to tear up some tackle, head to the Mobile River. Actually, I want to talk about this, too. You and I were in a discussion earlier this week that we're talking gators, too, which by the way, plenty of bait in the water when I was gator hunting the other night, so I'll just say that. We talked some bass fishing, but we also talked some red fishing. And this is a story that, gosh, since we've been talking, if people haven't heard us in the past, I don't tell my kids about how red fishing used to be. You know, like most of us are like, y'all should have seen it back when it was so.
No.
The red fishing when I was a kid was not that great growing up. I mean, catch some on the causeway, but you go here and catch one or two, and over there catch one. It's been getting better and better. You said this is another banner year for redfish.
Oh, it really is. It is amazing, Mike. You would appreciate this. I told Sean the other day when I talked to him, I was down on the lower end of the Mobile. Now, typically on the main river this time of year, especially when you get some current flow, either incoming or outgoing tide, I can typically do pretty well on, you know, a heavier spinnerbait, you know, just slow rolling it, especially on isolated pieces of wood.
Right.
A couple of days I went down there and I did that. I could not catch bass because of the redfish.
How about that?
Throw me in the briar patch.
Literally mangling my spinnerbaits up.
I'll be dead gum. You know, back years ago, Wayne, I fished Causeway a bunch back. I know I caught one or two back in the day, years ago. But there wasn't no redfish on the causeway, basically. I didn't catch them.
In the 80s when we started down, when I started in the causeway, it was like you'd go
fishing by then.
As the kid around here, you know, the 49-year-old child.
Yeah.
But we'd go to certain places, You know, I remember showing when Bobby Arrascada wanted to start, he was practicing for a tournament years ago, redfish-wise. I was like, back then I was still like, okay, it's this 25-yard stretch of this bank. It's this hole over here. It's, you know, it used to be like, it was that tough to catch one. There were like spots. Yeah. Now, you said you couldn't get to the bass. Y'all listen to this. You couldn't get to the bass for the redfish. That's a success story, man. That is.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, and that, it's like that, you know, on all the main rivers down along the causeway. And, I mean, I'm convinced that these are resident fish. I'm not sure they ever leave from up in that delta now.
You know, the research shows that they are way more freshwater tolerant. Well, heck, Lake Shelby down at Gulf State Park, right? The redfish are in there. There's some freshwater lakes in Texas. They can't reproduce, I don't think, without a certain amount of salt, but they can survive.
Right.
Yeah. Well, you know, this week, just to show you on the course, I fished over on the east side of the Delta too, down on the south end, and did really well on, you know, bass. You know, on up in the day, I've been catching a lot of them in the out on the main rivers with soft plastic. But, you know, I love to throw that watermelon chartreuse lizard. Mm-hmm. And not only have I been catching the redfish on it, but I've been catching them little flat guys too, buddy.
Yep. How about that?
They love that watermelon chartreuse lizard. So
I'm here to test that. I've been fishing with Wayne before. He's taken me, and I mean, he's like throwing lizards, catching bass, and then flounder.
Are you catching a fair amount of them? Is it better this year than in the past?
Quite a few, Mike. It's you know, now I typically, you know, a lot of times when I'm fishing, you know, like vertical banks out on the main river, you know, if we don't have a lot of current, I'll go with like a quarter ounce weight. And I typically don't catch a lot when I'm fishing a lighter weight. But when I step up to like a 3/8 or a 1/2 ounce weight, when I've got some current and I'm really trying to concentrate on getting that bait on the bottom,
right?
You know, it increases the number of flounder tremendously. Of course, a lot of times I'm not wanting to catch flounder, but I don't ever mind catching them.
No,
yeah, people just said, did he just say he's not meaning to catch flounder? But yeah, what about the redfish you're catching right now? You know, up northern stretches there, are they slot? Are they rats? Are they upper slot? Are they mid? Like, what's your size?
A pretty good mix of them, but a lot of them have been in that 3 to 7 pound range.
Perfect.
So you know, they're good solid fish. I think it was Tuesday. I caught two that were probably in the, you know, 12 to 14 pound range.
So starting into being bulls, you know, that's,
yeah. But you know, and I don't enjoy catching them near as much.
I don't either, actually. Yeah, because it's going to take longer.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I mean, so, but you know, the numbers are obvious. You know, and it's not just me. I mean, if you talk to any of these bass guys that spend a good bit of time anywhere from 65 south on this delta, you're going to hear the same story. I'm telling you, I hear it constantly. I get pictures from a lot of my fishing buddies. And, you know, I mean, we all see the same thing.
It's a great success
story.
So
let's go back 10 years ago to today. How much better is the red fishing today than it was 10 years ago?
Oh man, it's tenfold better.
Mm-hmm.
It really is.
It just keeps getting better and better.
It amazes me. It really does. I mean, and you know, and I catch them even when we had extremely high water earlier this year. I mean, we were at flood stage on the Mobile River. And I was going to the head of these creeks, and I was still catching redfish up there.
Yep.
You know, that's all 100% fresh water.
Once again, if y'all want to Google around, there's, I mean, Lake Shelby here, but I mean, and that's just one. You look in Texas, they've stocked them. These are lakes that are, they're not even on the coast. I forget the name of the lake, Wayne, and maybe you know, there's a lake in Texas they put redfish in. It's not even a coastal lake. It's not even like a place like Lake Shelby where the Gulf could come across in a storm. It's a regular lake, and they put redfish in there. and they made it. Yeah. Let me do this. We're gonna I'll ask the setup question here, and then we'll come back for the break and finish up, because it is August and it doesn't slow you down. But a lot of people will be like, man, when October gets here, when September gets here, you ready to kind of give us a breakdown of how we get into that great fall fishing on the causeway for us civilians, you know, the ones that aren't out there every day? You ready to kind
of? Oh, yeah.
All right.
Yeah, man, we can do it.
All right. We're going to do that. We're going to come back more with Captain Wayne Miller and talk about that and get ready for, I mean, because what I've experienced with Wayne over time is another level of bass fishing on the causeway.
When you do it every day, you get pretty good at it, and especially when you're pretty good to start with.
And I'll say this. The two of us are two guys that are lucky to have access to some pretty fantastic, you more than anybody, some fantastic private lakes.
Yeah. Yep.
If I woke up on a given morning, didn't have to be somewhere, and I said, they said, you can go fish that private lake or you can go with Captain Wayne in the fall bass fishing. You know which one I'd go to?
Oh, yeah, Beaver Wayne.
That's right. We'll talk more about that when we get back and why, the why of that. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, and our man, Captain Wayne Miller. And actually, before we even dive into this, people probably thinking, okay, I want to do what Sean's talking about, what Wayne's talking about, what Mike's talking about. So how do they go fishing with you right now or this fall? How do they get a trip?
They can reach me. They can call me at 251-455-7404.
Okay. So now we're going to talk about this process from now. I mean, you're catching fish in August, but this is, for a lot of folks, it's a tough month, and they're looking forward to
it. Really is.
I mean,
the heat's pretty oppressive for you know, it is for everybody, but I mean, you know, for people like myself that are acclimated being out in it every day, it's not as bad, but you have to prepare for that, and it's really tough, and it's not a good time of year to take kids out either. You know, I really encourage people, you know, if you're going to book a trip, you know, I know you can be enthusiastic about it, and, you know, you want to take an 8 or 9 year old, but man, you know, this isn't a great time of year to do that. I mean, you know, you really need to wait until it cools off some, but, you know, what we'll see as we transition, you know, into September and October, you know, we just got through talking about these, you know, Jack Crevalle. We talked about the redfish. You know, we'll continue to see the bait in these main rivers just pile up and pile up. Now, the natural progression of that going into the fall is, you know, we'll start seeing the shrimp move up, you know. And all this, you know, I mean, you can't really, I can't open up a calendar and tell you, okay, this is exactly when that's going to happen. But, you know, that's one reason it's great to stay in tune, listen to this radio show, because, you know, you can hear me talk about, you know, the lower delta. You'll hear, you know, Bobby talk about what's going on the lower end of the bay, the upper end of the bay. So you can get a pretty good feel for, you know, what's going on and, you know, how this bait movement is happening, because that's what really triggers that phenomenal fall feed. More than anything else.
It's a great way for people to look at it, right? Because it's not like people are like, where are the bass going? Where are the trout going? Well, they're going, what you said, where the bait's going.
Yeah, I mean, they really do. I mean, it's, you know, and a lot of guys, you know, the great thing about our fishery, and I mean, we're blessed to have the ability to go out on a fishery in the fall of the year where you can catch, legitimately, you can go out there and fish bass tackle and catch 7 to 8 different species of fish.
It is amazing, isn't it? It's awesome.
Yeah, it really is, Mike. Yeah. And, but, you know, there again, all that's predicated off that bait. And, you know, that's the thing moving into the fall. I mean, this time of year, yeah, in August, you can go out there, get on the main rivers, you get on the deeper banks, the outside swings, find vertical banks where you've got wood cover, and especially when you've got current, you know, you got to get in there and really pick that apart and work for them, because, you know, it's not typically not easy this time of year, but you can get out there and catch, you know, bass and the redfish and stuff. But, you know, as we transition into that fall bite, you know, when that bait really piles up, especially the shrimp, I mean, it just gets absolutely, I mean, I hate to use the nomenclature, but it gets stupid.
Yeah. Well, okay.
When we have those days where you can go out and catch, you know, 75 by lunchtime,
mm-hmm.
and, swing down to the oyster house or the bluegill and eat lunch and, you know, hop back out there and catch another 50, 75 in the afternoon.
Yeah, that gets your numbers up.
That's good. That's better, like you said a while ago, which one would you want to fish, a private lake or the Delta
fall, yeah.
with Wayne? I'm telling you, the Delta with Wayne in the fall, especially October probably, it's got to be unbelievable.
Where both thumbs are so damaged from lipping fish that, you know, it looks like you got that popcorn sealing stuff on your finger from all the tear it up. Okay, so we just have about 2 minutes left. So at some point, depending on the bait, that transition happens. So we go from main rivers at that point. Are we then going to switch to the smaller creeks or bays? Are we going to stay with the main river? Where do we go?
Yeah, you know, you can stay with the main rivers because there's tremendous numbers of fish. But, you know, as we get into the late part of October and November, you know, the smaller creeks and the bays start loading up really heavy again. And that's typically when you see that water temperature drop back down, you know, into the low 70s. And, you know, that's kind of what I look at, you know, for moving into those. But I stay in those main rivers, man, because it's just so many fish. And that's obviously the route that all this bait has got to follow. I mean, as it comes up out of the bay, I mean, it's got to move through those main rivers. So that's the first place you'll see the big indications of, you know, large volumes of you know, bait and shrimp and all moving up. And that's, you know, that's what I do. I get out there and, you know, really you have to pay attention. I mean, you know, and you have to be open-minded, too, because there's a lot of days, you know, and we talk about it on the show, obviously, moving into the fall. It's a time of year where you got to keep quite a few different baits on the front deck and, man, be ready to, you know, switch up and try something different because a lot of times all it is just hitting on that key bait and you'll go from, you know, instead of having a 10 fish morning, you may catch 50 or 60.
That's unbelievable. And on the river, too, a lot of those shrimp are going to get up in those grass beds along the riverbank.
Yeah.
And that's where you want to fish, the edge of the grass beds there. Is that right?
Yeah, man. And, you know, one thing that's really fantastic, and we've talked about this on the show, too, is the fact that we've seen such a fantastic reemergence of that aquatic vegetation over the entire Delta.
Absolutely. Yeah, it is. We have come a long way, baby, right?
Yeah.
The old slogan.
Yeah.
All right, we have got up against the end of the show here, but we're going to plan to talk again real, real soon. And if y'all haven't heard the kind of breakdown of fall fishing with Captain Wayne, make sure you keep tuning in because we'll be doing that going forward.
It's unbelievable.
Wayne, thank you for your time. We'll talk soon.
Thank you, Wayne.
Okay, guys, have a good one.
All right, buddy.
Will do. We got to get out of here. Prep Sports Report on the way next.
We gone.
We gone. Hopefully I have a Gator story for you by next week. All right.
Bye.